Blog Talk Radio.
Love to see it, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
How are you doing, Phil?
I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I am amazing. We've got another amazing Wednesday show lined up, so
we have got some good fun here. As those who listened on Monday know, we're working our way through Thomas Frey's 72 stunning things in the future that will be common 10 years from now that don't exist today. And tonight we're going to talk about the amazing future of transportation. But we're going to take it up a notch, Stephen. How do we make that amazing? How do we talk about transportation and make it amazing?
Well, I'm thinking to myself, auto-drive cars again? Haven't we talked about that enough? I mean, come on.
Well, we haven't, and we never will have talked about it enough. But...
Yeah.
But tonight, just let me answer that question. But tonight, we're not going to talk about it. We're going to talk about future transportation, and we're not going to talk about self-driving cars. We'll talk about those somewhere down the road. But tonight, we're going to talk about other sides of the amazing future of transportation, because just as you have so often pointed out, Stephen, the future is not just all one thing. Just like planets in science fiction movies, they're all got one climate, right? And often science fiction stories are set in this, future where one thing has changed, but everything else is exactly the same. No. In the future, we'll have self-driving cars, and we'll talk about that in an upcoming show. But you know what? Other things around transportation are going to change as well. And so tonight, how amazing is this? We're going to talk about the future of transportation, and we're not even going to talk about self-driving cars. I do have one self-driving thing we'll talk about there at the end. But
at the very, very end. But we'll have a whole show before we get there. Okay. All right.
That's right. And it's not a car anyway. So, all right. So let's begin. Actually, number 57, unmanned aviation, personal drone transportation. So there you go, self-driving, but it's not a car. What do you think? People flying around in self-driving drones in 10 years?
Well, Amazon has basically announced they want to do drone deliveries. I wonder about the, feasibility of such a thing, but, I think that there is, it's basically, we're talking about a ability to transport something by air in airspace that's not been usable before. We're talking about airspace that's, between 100 feet and the ground. airplanes don't really use that except when they're coming into land. A lot could be done within that space, and that's what drones could do. Besides spying on us, let's put them to work for us, and maybe this is something.
Well, we're not talking about delivery though. This is personal drone transportation though. Do you think people will be flying around in unpiloted, other than robot drones? I think that's really what we're describing here. People going from point A to point B in drones. What do you think?
Well, what do you sit in this thing? You say, "Hey, take me home," and it takes off.
Exactly.
We're talking about something that's in a quadcopter configuration, then, basically. Right. It looks like a drone. It's just sized up big enough for you to sit in.
Self-driving flying car, basically.
Amazing. Yeah.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say we'll see these in 10 years, and I'll tell you why. It's because I would never have dreamed how far we've come with self-driving cars by this year. Right.
Yeah.
So 2026, man, that's a long time from now. I bet. Yeah. People are going to be flying around in personal drone self-flying vehicles, perhaps extra legally. OK. But maybe illegally. Maybe it'll be, the FAA will have worked this whole thing out. But the technology is going to exist and people are going to be doing it. for
right.
sure. And as soon as it's legal, I want one.
well,
did I say one? Need.
It's a difficult thing to fly something. Flying a aircraft requires special training, and you know a lot of wealthy people that consider themselves smart because maybe they're a professional or something. They're a doctor or a lawyer or whatever. They've got the money, so they go out and get themselves an aircraft, but they're too busy to get good at flying it, and so they end up getting themselves killed in those things. There's a particular aircraft whose name I won't mention that's known popularly as the Doctor Killer,
mm-hmm.
and it's a high performance aircraft that that the doctors tend to buy and they tend to get themselves in trouble in. This sort of thing would allow people to have the benefits of getting around without having to devote the time to becoming a good pilot. And maybe that's a good thing. You could get all the benefits of air transport without the problems of being a mediocre pilot because you're too busy to devote the time, right?
So, right, you'd have a really good pilot. Yeah, and,
yeah.
and one
you, you'd
smart
have the best
enough.
Pilot ever, an AI that thinks about nothing but being a good pilot. So,
right, and a pilot that would make the best decision of all, which is not to take off, period, when circumstances don't warrant it, right? It's like, this is not a good night for this.
Yeah, AIs,
we're not going anywhere.
The problem with, there's a thing called get there itis.
Yeah.
Got to get there. I've got this appointment or whatever. AI, I don't care. If the conditions are too marginal, it'll call it. And
yep.
I think that's awesome. Yeah.
All right, let's move on. 360-degree video transportation monitoring cameras at most intersections in major cities throughout the world. I think we'll definitely have this in 10 years. We've got approximations of this now in a lot of places, right? I mean, we're closing in on it anyway, I would say. And the point is, with so many dashboard cameras, jurisdictions want to have these cameras in place because they want to have their say, right? They want to have their picture of what's happening. I can't imagine that we wouldn't have this in 10 years. If we don't have this in 10 years, it means the apocalypse has occurred or something, I would say.
Well, there are some places that pretty much have it already. Places like London. I mean, if you're out on a street, you are being recorded by multiple cameras.
Yep.
It's the world's most monitored city, I understand. There's a lot to be said for this. All too often, particularly in the work that I do as a personal injury attorney, there's just always some question as to, did it really happen the way that is reported here in this police report?
Right.
Cameras don't exaggerate. What you see is what happened. And provided you're able to interpret what you're looking at in the camera correctly, you're gonna know. And I think that's a good thing. We need to base our lives on reality, and that's given us a little more reality to look at, right? So
yeah, on the Monday show we talked about the kind of intrusive loss of privacy, but there's no privacy at intersections, right? Don't have any. There's no right to privacy there. It's a public place. And the more visual, factual information about what's going on there, I think the better. I think we can all agree on that. All right, how about this one? This one is just marginally transportation, I would say. Everywhere wireless. With high-flying solar-powered drones, CubeSats, and Google's Project Loon, wireless internet connections will soon be everywhere. I guess he's counting it as transportation because drones and balloons and things are going to be the ones providing it. Is that where we make the transportation connection?
These things that are doing, the machines that are doing a lot of the driving on these things need to be networked, and that's a big part of it. But hey, we weren't going to talk about self-driving cars, but if we're not having to do the driving, then we're going to want the ability to be using the internet, right? So it's everything wireless has a lot to do with transportation. It's not just that we do not use computers only when we're sitting at a desk somewhere. That's
right.
That idea is 10-15 years ago. Right. So it's only going to be more so in 10 years. You know, this one should shock nobody. We're already there.
Really. No, we're going to be streaming VR games, right, in our vehicles, right? I mean, that's going to take a lot of bandwidth.
It's a matter of degree.
All that stuff up there.
It'll just be a matter of degree as far as I'm concerned. We'll just turn this up, you know, another 10 notches.
That's right. How about this one? This is interesting. Black boxes for drones to record information in the event of an accident. You know, you think of, well, in some sense, they should already have that, right? Because, I mean, drones do have a computer running them. There's some kind of storage device keeping telemetry and all that kind of stuff. But actually having something in there that's a little more nearly indestructible that would report back on what happened, seems like that would be a pretty good idea. You definitely want one for, you know, the first item we talked about, right? If people are going to be flying around in these things, you want a black box to see what goes wrong. Because there would be accidents even with a very, very well-planned and put-together self-flying drone.
You want a black box.
This one seems like another no-brainer to me. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you want a black box for everything. Anything that moves needs a black box. And to some extent, we may not be aware of it, but most cars have what would amount to a black box in them now, okay? You know, you can see all kinds of information. If you get into the computer system of your car, you know, braking hard, whatever, you can find all kinds of interesting things. If we've got everywhere wireless, Phil, I think the need for a physical black box on board these machines is actually reduced. I mean, if the black box could be in the cloud,
virtual black box in the cloud.
To me, the airplane that disappears and we go, oh my gosh, what happened to it? Let's we can't recover the black box. We don't even know where the aircraft is. Well, if the black box is in the cloud, you know, maybe we can find the crash site more easily, right?
Right. Right.
So
that's probably an example of something where some redundancy wouldn't hurt.
Have the black,
you know, in case you lose your internet connection because of whatever happened, you still make a local copy of what's happening, right? But
you're also backing up by the second. You're doing a backup on the cloud. I think you do both, and there's no reason not to do both. So I'm with you on that.
All right, I love this next one. This one I want combined somehow with the first one we talked about, okay? But that might be 20 years out or more. Air-breathing hypersonic propulsion for commercial aircraft. All right. That sounds awesome. We don't have currently hypersonic and supersonic is the same thing, right? We're just talking about something that flies faster than sound, right?
That's right. That's another term for it.
Air breathing means we're not talking about a rocket. We're talking about an actual aircraft. And, you know what? This is a technology that we could have. We have had. And we need to get back. Right? I can't justify the word need there. But I'm telling you, we need this. Am I wrong? You know, we need to be able to fly around faster than sound. Now,
Phil, is something that's not just a toy for the rich. Okay, that was one of the reasons we don't have the Concorde anymore. Besides the fact that it had a questionable safety record, particularly as those jets aged, right? I mean, they became more and more questionable safety wise. But also, I mean, it was never the sort of thing that just the average Joe would buy a ticket for, I mean, it was the super wealthy person sitting in New York that decides, you know what, I want to be sitting, in 2 hours, I want to be sitting in Paris, drinking my favorite coffee. You know, I mean, the super wealthy guy that goes and, you know, plops down a couple $1,000s to, and it probably is more than that. To fly from New York to Paris real fast. It's, you know, what we need though is something that is, it's a bigger aircraft, you know, not just this narrow little tube, you know, that it was like one person could sit on one side of the aisle and two people could sit on the other side of the aisle, I think is what
right. Was. Right.
We need a bigger aircraft that carries more people, therefore is more economic and can bring that ticket price down, and so that we can, you know, everybody could get around the world faster that way. I think, yeah,
well, you know,
it is a need.
What the Concorde was a fighter jet with a very long, very wide fuselage. You know, that's what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a big fighter jet, and it was brilliant engineering, really. I mean, I admire the Concorde a lot, and I hated to see it go. But what we need is not a big fighter jet. What we need is a supersonic 737, right? Or an Airbus, right? We need a jet, an airliner that's designed as an airliner that can fly faster than sound. And I think that's the barrier that has to be crossed. I like the air breathing side because that leaves it open for us to talk about suborbital rocket methods of getting us around fast, which might be the new Concorde, right? That might be the new fast way for rich people to get around. So us, regular folks will have to just poke around at, two or three times the speed of sound, whereas the ultra rich can go anywhere in the world in 90 minutes, right? That's a nice set of scenarios as far as I'm concerned for fast transportation in the future. Okay, how about this? Just in case you want to go on that supersonic trip, but you can't stand the thought of having to, wheel that luggage, how about robotic follow-behind-you luggage to make airline travel easier? I'm sure you've seen people riding around on their luggage in these videos that have been circulating on Facebook.
That's not goofy-looking at all. Oh, gosh.
I look at that, and I'm like, okay, there's a limit. All right, that would just be embarrassing. I'm not doing that.
It is a little bit embarrassing looking.
But luggage that follows you like a well-trained dog, I think that might not be bad.
Here's my potential problem with it, and this problem can probably be overcome with good engineering. But the first thing that the guys that are checking your luggage want to know is, well, has this luggage been with you the entire time?
Right.
I guess it was behind me for most, at the time I was having to sprint through the concourse, it might have fallen behind 10 or 15 feet. Does that count? For safety purposes, you'd have to figure out a way that it'd be tamper-proof.
Yeah, absolutely.
And anyway, I don't know. I think that good engineering could overcome that problem.
I think so. Yeah, if you can make luggage that'll follow you around, you should be able to make luggage that nobody else can get into. Those seem like roughly equivalent level of hard to do things engineering wise.
And
just make sure we're working on both of those at the same time. Okay. Well, we've been talking about training pets, so. And Monday's show, we talked about sending your dog off to make him smarter. How about this? Robotic dog walkers and robotic people walkers. Let's take these one at a time, okay? Robotic dog walkers? This is a bad idea, I think, right? Now I don't have to go walk my dog. I'll just let the robot do it, right? Robotic lawnmower, okay, I can see that, because who wants to mow their lawn, right? Right. But walking the dog, you go out, you get some exercise, the dog gets some exercise, everybody's happy, right? That doesn't feel like a good idea to me.
It gives you an excuse to get outside. So, yeah, it's to some extent. Now, there are times when, you can't do it. But there's some tasks, Phil, that I just don't want taken away from me. That are more of a pleasure to do than a problem, right?
Yeah, mowing the lawn is not one of those. I just want to point out.
I saw a remote control lawnmower on Facebook this last week, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, except for I don't even want to have to do the remote control. Give it an AI, let it get to know my lawn, and you do it without me even being, having to remote control it. But walking the dog, I don't know. Well, what's this with robotic people walkers?
I assume that's pushing people
elderly,
in wheelchairs. I assume it's pushing people in wheelchairs. And to me, that implies people who are undergoing, you know, severe, pretty intensive care of some kind, because obviously, otherwise you'd just be talking about self-driving wheelchairs, right? I mean, people who are not mobile, robotics can help them out tremendously, right? In terms of helping them to get around. We're already seeing big, big leaps there. So yeah, I think for people who really are just incapacitated even to think about where they're going and stuff, robotic people walkers, you know, I suppose there would be some, there would be some limited application for that. But this one, I don't know. I wish Tom had said more about it. Neither one of these are really grabbing me all that much. I don't want the first one, and I'm not sure I understand the second one completely.
Yeah.
Maybe when we talk to him, we'll ask him to elaborate on that.
Okay.
All right, how about this? Ultra-high-speed tube transportation. As we look closely at the advances over the past couple decades, it's easier to see that we're on the precipice of dramatic breakthrough in ultra-high-speed transportation. Businesses are demanding it, people are demanding it, and the only thing lacking is a few people capable of mustering the political will to make it happen. Sound right to you?
Well, in this country, in the United States, trains of any sort have they just don't do well. They're seen as boondoggles. They just for whatever reason, and maybe we're just too wed to our cars as a nation, whatever. So they don't end up supporting themselves, so they end up just being a taxpayer hole, you know. And that's been, I believe, one of the criticisms aimed at things like Elon Musk's Hyperloop idea. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's just another fancier futuristic train thing that's going to end up, you know, not having the passengers required to make it efficient. But here's the difference, though. The Hyperloop could allow transportation at a speed that you couldn't duplicate with a car or maybe even with an airplane. If you got a Hyperloop set up between, you know, Los Angeles and Las Vegas, for example, that might be the fastest way to move between those two cities.
Right.
And you know, when it's the best in some way, like the best sort of transportation in some particular way, like maybe in this case the fastest, then maybe you don't have any trouble filling the seats. And when you can fill the seats, then it can pay for itself. So I have hope for the Hyperloop. I really do.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, trains do work in this country. They work when they're the best solution. Right. So when, you know, the Transcontinental Railroad was built, that works big time. Right. You look at commuter trains on the East Coast and to a lesser extent in some parts of the West Coast, those systems work pretty well because people really need it. You know, the highways are really clogged. It's not necessarily easy to get enough cars to where people are trying to go. And trains fill an important function there. Here. The variables would be speed, as you said, how fast it can go, and also how hassle-free you can do it. If you can hop on the Hyperloop more or less as easily as you can hop on any other train, then even if it's
without having to
airplane,
have the cavity search that you need to get on an airplane.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Even if it's slower, right? There's no taxi. There's no takeoff. There's none of that stuff. Even if the trip itself is slower, you probably get there faster. Assuming that the trip is faster, it's a better deal. People will want it for that for exactly that reason, and I think that's what Tom is talking about here in terms of the demand. People just want to get places more quickly. You know, we want to remove the inefficiencies around getting from point A to point B. That might involve a supersonic aircraft, or maybe it involves a supersonic train, right? You know, shuttling quickly between two important points. I can see that happening, and obviously, if anybody's going to make it happen, Elon Musk. You know, if we're going to get to Mars and if we're going to have Hyperloop, Elon, he's the guy. You know, I feel like he's the man to look to for those things. You know, for a minute there, I thought you were going to talk bad about trains, and I was going to have to warn you that Sheldon Cooper is listening to the show right now, and
he is part of our audience. Well, yeah, I agree that I was just voicing the criticism that I've already heard of the Hyperloop program and things like that. It's just another boondock. Well, no, not
it, it would be. Hey, it would be so easy to spend billions and billions on something like this and have it not work, right? I mean, have it just be a complete disaster. So there's no question that it's something that you have to look at very carefully. But again, I think. I think the right guy is promoting the idea. It comforts me tremendously that that this is one of Elon Musk's projects in terms of whether we're going to see this in this country. Well, and we'll see what others do with it too. We're not the only ones who might work out a solution like that. Okay, how about we've got a couple minutes left. Other transportation ideas. Did you have one? I've got one. If you don't.
You got a great one that I want to talk about, so go with yours.
Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the hybrid lighter-than-aircraft/airplane, which we've seen the first one of those take off happen, last week. This is a major step forward. We've been predicting this for a couple of years now, that you would see these kind of rigid, not quite lighter than air, but almost
They're heavier than air. And well, if it's a heavier than air airship, almost a dirigible, how in the world does it get off the ground? Well, that it's brilliant engineering.
It uses lift. It's an airplane. That's how. Yeah. So and
that's
it,
right.
It doesn't require nearly.
They're shaping the dirigible itself into that it has a slight wing shape that gives it enough lift. In addition to the helium that's already in it, right? You get a lot of advantages being heavier than air. You don't need a ground crew. You can take off and land much like a standard aircraft. But I mean, you tend not to have a big problem with stalling out either. You can go very slow when you touch down with these things. And you don't need the infrastructure. You can land, on rough ground. And
it's absolutely the best of both worlds. It flies up to 16,000 feet, so it's not up there in the airspace with jet airliners by and large. It is the prototype or the actual craft that got flown last week is the largest aircraft in the world, 302 feet long. This thing can run for about a month. Which is cool. You put it up there. It also can run with a crew, or can run in a totally autonomous mode, and it can go a lot longer. Obviously, if there's not people on it. So I think we'll see a lot of these 10 years from now. And my prediction is maybe by 10 years from now, this will also be an alternative for personal transportation. Maybe the drones.
Maybe
the drones will do it, but maybe people have kind of their own, kind of self-driving, self-flying, slightly heavier than air RV. I mean, I can just see this as kind of like the ultimate vacation vehicle. It could be nice and big, and man, it'd be fun. I want to get one. What do you think?
Well, I would love that too. I mean, what was in the movie Contact? The billionaire had where he was staying was in a blimp, right? Until he relocated to the International Space Station.
He was just in a 737. He didn't have this. He needed this.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
He would have loved this. That particular character would have loved this. But I'm thinking also things like, what if you could land in areas that are subject to drought? And you could bring aid and relief to various areas of the world without the infrastructure of a giant airport. You could be bringing these things in. I know the military would be interested in something like this as a launch platform for drone swarms,
Absolutely.
That's a huge thing.
I think we're going to see a lot of these. This is becoming technology.
This is a decade from now. We're about to see the second age of airships. And I think it's going to be entirely because we figured out a way to make them that are heavier than air that works.
I feel this is a real addition to Tom's list that we've made here. And Tom, you don't have to thank us. We're going to keep using your other options.
you
gave us 72. We're giving you 2 so far. So, you know, it's all good. Who's keeping score on that, right? Okay, well, that does it for our amazing Wednesday show. Great talking with you, Stephen. We will be back again on Friday, continuing working our way through the list of amazing technologies of the future. And until next time, live to see it.